The Floor Academy podcast is sponsored by Trilama, the trade labor marketplace, where businesses can find skilled trade labor, such as flooring installers, and where flooring installers and other skilled tradespeople can find permanent or project work. You can set up your profile at Trilama.com, TRALAMA.com, or download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. And remember, Trilama is always free for skilled tradespeople. Welcome to the Floor Academy podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, owner of Illustrious Hardwoods in Mesa, Arizona. We are here to talk with flooring professionals from all across the country about the issues that matter to you. I want to encourage you to learn while you earn. This week's guest is Mario Fernandez. Mario owns and operates Fernandez Floor Covering in Corona, California. Starting at a young and tender age with his father, he helped install VCT flooring in military housing. At 18, he went full-time with his dad and eventually went out on his own. After running his own show and having a shop and then losing everything during the Great Recession, he has built it back up by being a labor-only shop. Find out why Mario is functioning purely as a sub, how he has changed business strategies over the years, and things you can do to help motivate your employees. It all starts right now. Mario Fernandez, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
Awesome. Welcome to the Floor Academy podcast.
Glad to be here.
Excellent. This has been one that I always knew I wanted to have you on. I never knew what topic to go with. And so you showed up over here in Mesa, Arizona recently, which is where I'm at. And we were able to hang out for a minute and shoot the poop. And it finally hit me on what we needed to talk about. So that worked out really well. Most people know you as
my good looks, right?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Your good looks, your affinity for tacos, and your awesome swag that you have. So a lot of people know you as Floor God. A lot of people know you as a commercial guy, and a lot of people know you as the guy that constantly posts food for absolutely no reason in flooring forums.
That's me.
But who is Mario Fernandez actually?
Who am I? I'm just an average guy. I don't know what else to say about myself. I'm nothing special, you know. Like I said, I'm just a guy that enjoys what I do. Been doing it for a lot of years.
Well, you know, give us the breakdown, right? Like I know you worked for your dad, and that's where it started. But you know, where'd you start? How'd you start? Why'd you start? Where have you kind of gone through your career to get you where you are today? You know, just like that quick 30,000 foot view of your career, if you will.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm second generation installer. Started working weekends and holidays for my dad at a very, very early age. I don't think my dad ever wanted me to learn how to walk. So, my dad mostly did military housing. So that's where I got my start in flooring. We did a lot of VCT, military housing. If my dad got a job, we were there for 2 to 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Day in, day out. Most of the work was out of town. Started full-time right out of high school at 18. I am now 57 and been doing it pretty much 7 days a week since then. I transitioned from military housing into commercial work in probably the mid-90s when I went on my own away from my dad.
Okay. And when you transitioned out, were you subbing? Were you running the show and bidding things?
No, when I parted from my dad, I actually just went to work for another floor covering company, a bigger one. Started out in residential housing. Got the opportunity to start in commercial work, and that was probably, 90. I've been doing commercial work ever since then. Okay. Back in 2007, I tried to transition into going to work for myself. Did a couple of stores. They turned out okay, so I wanted to grow myself a little bit more. Hoping to have a brick and mortar one day, took on a couple of more stores, but this time my installation crew had an epic spell. Lost that contract, lost a ton of money on those two jobs. That's when our recession hit in 2008. Lost everything, cars, trucks, houses, everything that I worked for was gone, virtually on the street. So it was like starting all over again. This time, when I came back, I decided I wanted to be just a labor shop owner. Didn't want the responsibility of having to bid. Didn't want the responsibility of, you know, having to finance these jobs. Now, I collect a paycheck for the work that I do. Everything I do is piecework. Some of the companies that I work for carry my payroll for me, so I don't have that burden anymore.
Okay.
And I don't know what else you want to know.
No, I think that that's great. And that's, I mean, that's kind of the perfect segue into what we want to talk about, because I know as we were sitting there talking, you know, we went over that you'd run your own show, and now you're strictly subbing for a company, and you've built up a crew that's, I guess, semi-reliable is probably an appropriate term for them.
Well, yeah, because you know, two of the five guys that I use are family, so that helps. That helped.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've been up, you've been down, you're probably up again, but it's right. You can go on these online groups and everyone's always talking about what do you charge? What do you do? And there's guys like myself and there's, you know, you got your Ken Ballen and we're out there running our own show. We're selling our own products. We're doing everything right. And that's one way you can play this game. Then you've got guys that strictly sub, you've got retailers, you've got, there's a million ways to skin the cat and play this game and try and be profitable at it. Obviously there's more cheese when you do everything, right? Cause you can sell the material and make money on that. You can sell the job and make money on that. Like there's ways to make it more profitable, and you've probably seen both sides of that. So what I really want to get into is ultimately you made the decision of like, I'm not dealing with this anymore. I'm sick of running around and trying to float everybody. I'm sick of chasing down checks because I can't get the walkthrough and have people give me the final payment. You know, on commercial stuff, you're probably having money held for a year until the project passes warranty or whatever it's going to be, and then you get that final, you know, 5 or 10%, whatever's in the contract. Like,
right,
there's a lot of stuff going on, and so now you can just go in and you do the work, they cut you a check, you pay your guys, and you get what's left over. But what got you there? What was the incentive? What made it so hard, you know? And we can start anywhere. This is going to take a while to break down, but there's yeah, pros and cons to both sides of things.
Yeah. It's like when I finally decided that I wanted to break off from my dad and go on my own. My first opportunity was to do a couple of CVS stores. You know, it was pretty simple. They were all VCT. Still, that's a big chunk of change for a small person to have to float that type of money for material and wait 90, 120 days to get paid. Anyways, I made the mistake of not being on the job on two of them. They have roofers working above us as we're spreading glue. Floor was laid, rocks were in the glue. I ended up having to replace both of those doors. Right there, that broke me.
Yeah.
That broke me.
That's a tough learning curve.
Now, making that decision to just be a labor shop, I take on bigger jobs. I don't have to worry about coming up money for, 20,000 feet of VCT that I'm installing. All I got to do is provide the labor.
Mm-hmm.
I get that check each week. Everybody gets paid. I don't have that worry of having to wait 90 days, 120 days for my money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a brick and mortar, because I am just a labor shop.
Yeah.
I have a storage facility where I store, all my tools, extra materials that I may have or need, but I don't have that monthly rent each month.
Mm-hmm. And so, what's the difference in overhead, the difference in price level, or like income level? Do you feel you're still making the same kind of money? You're just, you have less stress?
I have less stress. I'm making the same amount of money, but unlike you or Ken, I deal in big volumes. I deal on big commercial jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So my price might be a little bit cheaper because it's a bigger commercial job. So it's based on how proficient me and my crew is as far as how much money I'm going to make.
Yeah.
And it varies. Some days, some weeks are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
Because with each job, there's a situation that I don't know what we're going to run into. Other trades are in our way, or there's always something.
Yep. I think you can, any kind of big project, new build, stuff like that, you can run into. Even on, I only do residential remodel work, and I can still run into that if they want another person involved. The project I'm on now, there's a painter, and we had to talk it through of, hey man, I know you want to paint, but you're in my way. You got to go, and you're going to have to come back, and the homeowners are going to have to deal with it. This is what's realistic, and I need to go first. So we had to work through it, and you can't always do that, especially on bigger settings like that, when they're breathing down your neck that they have 5 more days to get this done and they got to open the doors and put furniture in. So,
well, they seem to think that the installer, the floor guy, they can work with anybody, and we can't. I can't have anybody on my floor.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. There's just, it's impossible.
Especially, all that stuff gets glued down, man. It's going to shift if people are on. I get it, but hey.
And I've been around long enough, and I have a good rapport with a lot of the construction companies that hire these bigger stores where I'm just a labor, so they know me. They know what I expect when I get to a job.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, it wasn't like that. It's like, oh, the young guy with an attitude. Well, no, I don't have an attitude anymore. I'm just letting you know that I'm here not to be your friend. I have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
The quicker I get it done, the more money I'm going to make. So you need to get out of my way.
Correct. And the sooner they're going to get it done too, right?
Yeah.
We can all be more efficient. So I get it.
So that's why it seems like the flooring guy is always the one that's working the nights or the weekends so that every other trade can get done what they need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like I said, now that being a labor shop, I rest easy at night. I don't have that headache or worry about overhead and rent and, everything. How am I going to pay this supply bill, or how am I going to pay that supply bill or this supplier?
Mm-hmm.
All I have to worry about is installing.
And then you feel you do well. Obviously you have a home, you have a wife, you have kids, and you're taking care of them. I get that. And so, you're obviously doing okay. You also live in California, which is astronomically pricey. So, if you're just churning out volume, then it appears to be working for you. And like you said, you have 4 or 5 guys. And so you've obviously gotten it down to a routine through experience, but for a long time it was just you and your son, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so first you had to make the decision that you weren't going to float other people's businesses and that you were just going to be a labor shop. And then you got into it and you have, your son now being third generation working alongside you, and you didn't want to scale at first and bring people on from our conversation that we had previously. So what led to this thing of, well, shoot, like, okay, we're going to have, I'm going to have to bite the bullet and bring more people on, because it's well, hard.
The demand for me to be more places than I could be at once, you know? So now with enough people, I might have two large projects going. Still, I'm not comfortable with not being on the job all the time, because it seems like that's when there's problems. Or, you know, if I'm not there, something goes wrong, but I don't find out till 3 months down the line where that person that I may have been using no longer works for me because he wasn't as good as he thought he was or said he was. Mm-hmm. So he's gone, but now I'm stuck going back to fix his work. So I'm still cautious of how many projects I'll take on.
Okay.
Because I need to be on the project. You know, my stepson, you know, he's very good at what he does. I trained him well. You know, but he doesn't have that experience to deal with some of the things that come up on these jobs. Or people see that he's younger, so they might try to be pushy with him, where with me, they won't push me around. It won't happen. I don't let it happen.
Yeah. But I mean, so you can take on more work, but you stopped dealing with some of that because you wanted less stress. So now the more employees, the more stress technically, because now you've guaranteed people a livelihood, and that's stressful in and of itself. So why scale up if you were trying to reduce the stress level?
Well, to me, it's not really scaling up, because you, on these commercial projects that I do, I need at least four guys.
Okay.
You know, back before when it was just Michael and myself, we were doing mostly TI projects, maybe 100 yards of carpet tile or sheet vinyl, something like that. Now I'm into the volume where, like I said, you know, we're doing 20,000 feet of LVT. Mm-hmm. With two guys, that's not getting it done quick enough. So I have to bring in more people.
Okay.
So still get it done on a timely manner. I still trying to keep it small. That way I stay control of everything. But if the job demands that I need more manpower, you know, then I have to bring that manpower on.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they know that it's only part time, because if I start losing money, I'm not going to keep you on my crew. I can't afford to. I'm not going to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way it always needs to work. I can lose money on you while you learn, but even then I shouldn't be losing a lot of money.
Right.
Everyone can figure out their own equation, but you know, if you're paying a guy $15 an hour to start and he works 8 hours a day, that's $120 a day. Then you got to match some taxes and pay some, you know, workman's comp and stuff. You probably got to be, he's got to produce at least $160 a day for you to break even. Should he be able to do that? Probably, you know, $160 to $200 a day. They should be able to do that. So do you necessarily lose money? No, but you're not going to make money for a while, right? You got to get them producing $400 or $500 a day.
Right. I mean, and what's happening is when I bring on these apprentices or new guys, basically the other two or three guys on the crew is carrying them. They're producing, so that kid's getting a paycheck because he doesn't know enough to earn enough to pay for himself. Mm-hmm. So like the whole crew really carries him. So they all have a vested interest in making sure that he's taught right and that he's brought along quickly. You know, either you get it or you don't get it.
That's an interest. I don't know that I've heard anybody explain it that way. That's interesting. You have to get your crew on board with everybody knowing that this guy is costing them money, because now if you can get him up to speed, you can get the project done faster and get onto another project, right? If you can knock out the 20,000, you can get to the next.
Yeah.
Okay. See, now that's, I don't know that a lot of people are trying to teach their employees something like that. Like, yes, you want them to train them. Yes. You don't want them to harass them to the level that they're going to leave after a week or a couple days because they're just getting ragged on for being the new guy. Mm-hmm. And so if you train them to have an interest in them succeeding because it helps the entire team. That's a really good point. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, that's the only way it's going to work. You know, I need everybody to be on board because, you know, that one guy that's making $15 an hour, I'll use installing top set base, for example. The guy started out, you know, he's barely getting a box, maybe two boxes a day. Well, an average installer should be getting between 8 and 10 boxes of base mm-hmm. a day in order to pay for himself and put a little bit of money in my pocket. So if he's only getting two boxes of base, you know, he's costing me money. So the rest of the crew is picking up that slack by making sure that they get more installed to cover his wages. But it comes to a point where, hey, after 3 months, you know, they're all watching him and they're saying, hey, you know what? You need to pick up the pace.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody will carry anybody for a little while, but if they don't see them making that vested interest, you know, then there becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it really affects morale really quickly, because then if he keeps getting a paycheck and he doesn't have to work hard,
yeah,
why do I have to work hard? What can exactly. I get away with?
Right. And then that's where they start scaling back. Oh, well, I'm only going to give Mario 70% instead of 110.
Mm-hmm.
Because why should I give him that 110? And, you know, this other guy, I'm paying his wages, you know, he's kind of like skating. So I tried to say 3 months. After 3 months, you might not still be making me money, but we better start seeing progress in you as far as what you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. if you're the new guy, you're the bottom guy on the totem pole. There's always something for you to be doing. There's no need for you to be standing around. I shouldn't have to tell you every minute of every day. You need to start thinking for yourself, okay, what can I do to help these guys?
Yeah. Well, and within 3 months, you should learn the routine.
You couldn't pay to stand around until he could actually earn something and perform. You know, they want to install, but well, guess what? You got to pick up trash before you can install. Once all the trash is picked up, you know, then you can come over here and start learning to install, but you have to do your job before you can learn our job.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's pretty standard with most people, right? Like, you got to learn how to prep. If you can get all your prep work done, then now you can come do the fun part.
I can remember working for my dad. And like I said, he did military housing. I would sweep the whole house and he would walk in and he says, nope, you know, sweep it again. And you think, what the hell do you mean? It looks clean. And it's funny. Now
you're doing the same thing. Other guys
that work for me, they're thinking, God, this guy sweeps the floors like crap. Well, at one time, you swept the floor like crap, you know, but they don't realize how bad they swept the floor until they got to spread glue on it and there's rocks or there's dirt and there's dust. And they realize, oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't believe it, but my dad used to say sweeping is an art, and it truly is.
Yeah.
I'm old school. I still use a foxtail. I do not shop vac. I feel I do a better job with a foxtail and a scraper than, you know, going around the walls with a shop vac.
Yeah. I can see that. I shop vac all the time and it still misses stuff. So, and I sweep with a broom and then I shop vac my floors. So I still find stuff underneath the drywall, and you bump the drywall and new stuff falls out. And
uh-huh.
It's difficult, but you make it work. But yeah, I mean, with what you're doing, right? Like you said, if you get a rock under the VCT, that's going to show up in a couple months, and that's a problem.
Oh, sure it is.
Oh, okay. I mean, so let's talk, like, you've been able to scale into larger projects, right? So now instead of doing 900 square feet of carpet tile or the 100 yards that you were getting assigned a day because it was just simple work and only two of you, now you can get 20,000 square foot projects done because it's four or five of you. there's obviously better money in volume, because that's how you make money commercially. Like, the rates aren't as high, but when you have a giant rectangular room to put 20,000 feet in, it moves a lot quicker than a cut up 2,000 square foot house.
Exactly.
It's, but you like, you wanted the store, you wanted to fund stuff originally, right? Like, that's what you were working towards, and that was going to be scalable in a different way.
Right.
So do you feel the scalability works the same, and this way you just have less things to carry because you're not having to front the money?
Well, now it boils down to my age. I'm 57 years old. I don't want a brick and mortar. You know, like I said, I decided and made that decision to be just a strictly a labor shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, I mean, I didn't want my kids to come into the trade, and I tried to tell them, stay away from the trade, you know, use your brain instead of your muscle. This trade that I'm in, commercial, it's nights, it's weekends. If you weren't brought up in it, you don't understand it. Sometimes I forget that new kids that are starting out didn't have the opportunities that I did. I don't know any different. Mm-hmm. I wake up early. I work 7 days a week. That's the way I was brought up. I don't know any different. Nowadays, kids aren't like that. And I have a hard time remembering that they weren't all, they weren't raised like me. And sometimes I have to put myself in check and say, hey, you know what? Not everybody wants to work 7 days a week.
Yeah.
But you know, that's me. This, I don't have any hobbies. Flooring is my life.
Flooring is a hobby. I don't care what anybody says. Okay. My wife's always like, you're always working. And I'm like, no, like now I'm just I'm talking with my friends, but you're talking right. about flooring and you're talking about your business. Like your work. Yeah. No, there's both sides of it and they're enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly.
It all blends together for me. There's a very blurred line in there.
Well, it's like, you know, before Facebook, you know, I have met more people on Facebook through these forums than I would normally in a lifetime, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. Like I said, I got to meet you working in Mesa. I got to meet Cornell, you know, brought him on. He was able to physically work and help me. Now I have someone in Arizona for when this project continues, mm-hmm. which is probably 20,000 feet of ECT. You know I can depend on him. I got manpower in Arizona.
Yeah.
I'd like to have manpower in every state. That way, you know, I don't mind where I go to work. It just makes it easier if I know someone in a city.
Correct. Especially if they have access to the local resources, right? It gives you a leg up. You're not trying to find it. You're not struggling. You're not finding the guy that's methed out. And
yeah.
All kinds of bad things could happen.
Uh-huh.
What's okay, so if you don't want to talk about this, we don't have to. Let's, if you're willing to get brutally honest, that would be cool. So you said you lost stuff along the way, right? Like the crash came and it hit you hard. So mm-hmm. has that changed how you actually run your business? Were there like financial lessons incorporated into why you lost everything, or was it really just like you got hit that hard by the economy and you didn't have the money to pay the bills? Or was it all like financed and on credit cards and loans, and then you just weren't getting the volume of work to pay for it? Like, how has that kind of...
When the economy crashed, you know, like I said, I lost everything. Lost my house, lost my cars, lost my work vehicles. My wife and the kids had to go live with some family members. I was on the street. Didn't even have a truck. So, you know, like I said, I had hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, I have a hard time turning down work because I don't ever want to be in that position again. You know, mm-hmm. when work is there, I'm going to take it because, like I said, I don't want to be in that position again to where, you know, I absolutely have no income coming in. Sometimes a little bit of money is better than no money at all. And yeah. a lot of people will disagree with me, but hey, to each their own.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm still rebuilding. I'm still trying to get up off my feet. Like I said, I lost everything. You know, when it crashed hard, and my credit score was probably less than 300. That's how bad it hit me. I lost everything. Mm-hmm.
Is there, but it, within that, like, was it just a lack of work because you couldn't find it? Was it that, you know, was it poor financial decisions that did it? Like, how have you changed your approach so that, you're not going to end up in that situation? Because even if the economy crashes again, right? Like, I'm sure you're taking measures to set yourself up to not ever be there again.
I'm not putting myself into that position to where, you know, I have everything out on the line like I did on these two stores. You know, once I have to replace that with money out of my pocket, you know, that wiped me out. That anything I had, you know, and like I said, I had creditors looking for me. And when you don't have any work coming in and you have no bills, you know, people aren't nice to you.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're paying your bills, they're your best friend. As soon as you hit hard times, you know, everybody's attitude changes. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be in that position again. I don't want to be, you know, financially in debt, you know, for materials. You know, I just don't. I'm too old. Yeah. I wouldn't want to try to recover again. It's too hard.
I get it. I mean, I had, when I was still doing film. And Arizona is not huge on like film projects. It's just not where a lot of people come to do stuff. And so I graduated film school and I wasn't paying my school loans. I wasn't getting a lot of work. We went 6 months in 2009 without paying the, no, we bought the house in 2009, 2010 probably. We went 6 months without paying the mortgage, 6 months of not paying the HOA. I was making enough money and I kept the internet going, the electricity, the water, food, because we were getting food stamps. And then I kept the internet going so that I could continue to look for work. And then I would get enough money to like be able to pay those small amounts of bills. And so eventually the bank, you know, the bank's going to come calling eventually like, hey man, you got to pay this mortgage that you're not paying. And, I got that letter of notice, and luckily, out of the grace of God, like this project came along that was going to be long enough and pay well enough that I'd have all the money by the end of it. And like a week before the bill was due and they were going to start the court proceedings, and I busted my butt on the project and got it all paid, and then I was broke again. So right back to square one, no money. It all went away to catch up on bills. But then that show came back and they came back like 3 months later, 6 months later, something. I was able to make it work for another little bit. And then, but they came back, they shot for 9 months straight and I was on that show for 9 months. And that like that year I made really great money. It was the first time I ever made $100K in a year. Except it was all 1099.
Yeah.
And I had money in the bank because I knew I was going to owe taxes. But film work is slow, just like flooring, right? Like right after the holidays, it slows down a little bit unless you're like Empire, Home Depot, or you have a really established business. Right. So there's not a lot of TV shoots around that time. And so January rolled around. I didn't have any work. Okay. So I had to use the savings. February rolled around. I had to use the savings. March rolled around. I had to use the savings. Now I got to file my taxes. Uncle Sam wanted 10K. I didn't have that 10K anymore because I spent it to support my family and make sure we paid our bills. Turns out that being in debt to Uncle Sam is worse than being in debt to the mob. At least the mob would have came and like broke my legs and called it even. Uncle Sam doesn't play that game. So you get on a payment plan with them.
Yeah.
Well, if you only pay them the minimum that they set up, their interest and fines are higher than the minimum payment. So your amount owed keeps going up and up and up. And it took them 6 months with me fighting up with them for them to finally say, oh, didn't anybody tell you to take out a private loan?
Yeah.
And I said, no, this is the first time you're telling me this. Thanks. I'll go do that. So then I had to go to Dad and say, Dad, can I have like $15,000 to pay the government? So Dad loans me $15,000. Great. Now I'm not doing film work anymore after I get this money, and I get into flooring, and I, you know, I'm working on building my business and stuff. And my dad's watching me throw money, right? I'm buying a tool. I'm buying a truck. I'm buying a trailer. I'm buying more tools. Never once did that man come to me and say, hey, what about me? And so it was amazing. He's paid now in full. He has been for a while, but to be in that situation, right? To like it, life's hard enough. And then when you owe people money, like you just feel like there's this weight on you and it sucks. It makes everything so much more difficult. So I get why you don't want to be there. I don't want my wife to be without a home. I don't want my kids to be without a home. I don't want to be without a home. I want to be able to provide for them. That's the arrangement we made, right? Like I stepped up and said, I will take care of you. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I get the, I need to hustle 7 days a week. I get the, I'm going to take what comes my way, right? You always see, there's always the post, right? Like, oh, you got to have the daily minimum. You can't go under it. Well, I've heard plenty of stories of people going under their daily minimum or taking the small job and it leads to some huge one. Sometimes you got to bite the bullet just to get the work.
That's right. That's right. That's right. You know, like I said, in California, everything is so expensive. If I was younger, would I try it again? Maybe, but I think I'd want to move out of state. I don't think I'd want to try to do it in California again. Mm-hmm. California is too hard.
Being a business owner is hard. I don't care if you're just trying to sub out the labor. I don't care if you're trying to build the retail store. It's just not easy. There's systems to make it be easier, mm-hmm. but you have to make a system that works for you. And that takes time and effort and failure and slaps across the face. So, I mean, what you're doing now is probably the best thing you've had going, but it's taken how many years to get there, right?
Yeah. You know, there's never enough hours in the day, like I said, especially mm-hmm. with California's traffic. I don't limit myself to a 10-mile radius or a 20-mile radius. I live in Corona. I will drive, you know, 190 miles down to San Diego, or I will go up to Bakersfield. You know, I don't limit myself to where I work. You know, if the money's good, you know, I'll take it. I've worked in Sacramento, you know, mm-hmm. I will go.
Well, okay. There's an interesting thing. Okay. So this goes back to me having knowledge of how the film world works. Actually why the stupid magazine and show is, or website and show is called TMZ. It's known as the 30 mile zone. So from this epicenter in Hollywood, there's a 30 mile zone that as long as the production takes place within the 30 mile zone, you don't have to pay mileage. You don't have to pay for lodging. You don't have to do anything like that. So how does that work for you? At what point in travel are you telling these companies that they're paying for lodging and they need to give you per diem so that you can have food and all that fun stuff?
Any work that I do out of town, let's take Mesa, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, they are paying for my room. They're paying, you know, for rooms for my crew. They are giving me in advance per diem money so that, you know, I'm going out of town to work for them. I shouldn't have to be putting any money out of my pocket. So when I go out of town, I make sure that I have you know, that they're renting my room, you know, mm-hmm. that they are cash advancing me money so that I can give to my crew so that they can eat. I'm doing them a favor to go out of town. I don't want it, and I shouldn't have to cost me any money.
Correct. But Mesa's 650 miles away.
You know, that's where, like I said before, all that would have been out of my pocket. Now that I choose just to be a labor shop, you know, someone else is paying for that. That's yeah. not having to come out of my pocket. I don't have to worry about it.
But it, like, what may I get that. And that's all that's good, right? Like, for other guys mm-hmm. to hear that they need to control that and they shouldn't have to be going out of pocket for that stuff. That's great info. But at what point, you know, how far are you traveling before you put your foot down and say, I will not drive that far and not have lodging? Because like you said, in California, a 20-mile drive can take you 3 hours in that traffic. Mm. So, you know,
a lot of it's going to depend on the job. Like I said, you know, if I'm going to San Diego, and I mean, I don't do it anymore, one day jobs, because usually, you know, when I do these out of town jobs, they're lengthy jobs, 20,000 feet, you know, so I'm there for a month. I'm there for 6 weeks.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's something that I won't drive every day. I mean, I will limit myself to say maybe 75 miles to where I'll drive. A lot of the times the guys would rather drive home every night than stay out of town.
Yeah.
Unless we're far away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and like I said, being in California, you get used to sitting in traffic. That's why we leave at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we try to be, if we're coming home, we want to be on the road by 2:30.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not enough hours in that time to get done what we need to get done. So you end up working a longer day so that you don't have to drive back the next day.
Yeah.
But usually there's always some type of trip charge involved.
Okay. I mean, you're making sure you're compensated for in one way or another. Either they're going to pay lodging, they're going to pay you more because of trip charge. They're going to.
Right.
You're going to make sure Mario gets paid at the Correct. End of the day.
Right? Yeah.
As it should be. You know, because I'm residential only, excuse me, and then I'm in Phoenix, I limit myself to anything within an hour radius of me. Now, granted, I live off of two of the major freeway junctions, and like an hour gets me, I think the furthest I've gone is like 53 miles or something like that, maybe a little bit more, because it was like an hour and 10 minutes, and I mean, come on, what's 10 minutes when you're driving an hour? But like it, for normal stuff, I've done a couple of cabins up north, but they let me stay in their cabin while I do them, so that's kind of different. Like I'll go stay 3-4 days and do a cabin, that's fine. The views are worth it. But in town, like if it's, look, if we got to put in an average 8 hour day, that's 10 hours already. And if I'm only awake 16 hours a day because I'm supposed to sleep 8 hours, yeah, I could use a couple hours to myself. So that's where I'm at. And I don't charge anything extra for it. It's just, I know that's how far I go. But I mean, I get the mileage for it, and then I get, you know, I don't know, maybe I put a little surcharge on it, right? Instead of something being 250, it's 275 now.
And right.
I, you know, there's 2,000 square feet, so I make an extra $500. That should pay for gas and time for the week. That's fair. But I'm not like putting a specific trip charge.
Because my guys are paid hourly, but I get paid piecework, you know. Sometimes it doesn't always work out in my favor, you know, yeah. And that's what they have to understand, that, you know, I'm only getting paid X amount for this job. So, you know, you decide, oh, you don't want to work today, or, you know, the helper's slowing us down, you know, that's costing me money. So, like I said, some weeks are good. Some weeks mm-hmm. aren't so good.
Yeah. Well, that's you the know? Way it's all. I don't know that there's any way to change that. What do? You switch them to piece rate, and then they, there's a whole nother mess with that system. Well,
it's too complicated when you got three or four guys working to try to
correct
piece work out work that I'm already piece working. I mean, if it's a completely different job, you know, problem is it's all my tools. So if you're going to do the, if you want piece work, you want to make the more money, then you better start investing in your own tools. That's what I did.
Yep. No, I'm with you. And even if you try and give them percentages, then it's messy because maybe that guy doesn't do 30% of the work on that job. And this guy knows exactly. that he didn't like, right. Mm-hmm. There's always an issue. There's an issue with every system. It's
there is
finding there's out what works best for you. I personally think hourly is the most fair way to go. I also think that not everybody needs to be running their own business. Just because you run a business right now doesn't mean that that's necessarily the best setup for you. It may be better for you to close down and go mm-hmm. and work for somebody else. And they're going to pay you hourly. They're going to pay your taxes for you. And then mm-hmm. you can file that form at the end of the year and you didn't have to set any money aside. Maybe that's a better way for you to go since so many contractors have problems with money. I don't know. I'm not saying to close down your mm-hmm. business. I'm saying it's an option.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been there before too. You know, I've definitely, you know, since 2008 worked as an employee just because I didn't want the headache. I just wanted to go and work and collect a paycheck, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm used to working for myself, you know. And, you know, the money's definitely better when you're a subcontractor compared to an employee.
More risk, more reward. But there's more on the line, right? Now you have, you're subbing the work, but if something happens with that floor, it's still going to come back on you.
Yep.
So it's, you're not completely scot-free. Like, I know you were limiting... That was the whole point, right? Like, I don't want to have to put the money out there. I don't want to... You wanted less responsibility, but still be able to make a fair wage. So you take on the responsibility of just the labor, and you can still make a fair wage.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you're now trusting four or five other guys
mm-hmm.
to provide quality labor, and that can bite you in the butt really quickly. I mean...
Well, it has a couple times.
And I think it's inevitable. We mm-hmm. if I don't care how well you follow the rules, I don't. At some point, something's going to bite you in the butt. If we're playing a law of averages, a floor guy that escapes his career with absolutely no claims, no issues, no lawsuits, no nothing, is a complete rock star and an oddity, in my opinion. Yep. I think it's inevitable. We're all going to have something, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't even care if you have to go back and just re-glue in a transition piece.
Right.
You done screwed up. Uh-huh. You're not going to win them all. You can't. So.
But I try to make sure that if I do got to go back to a job, hopefully it's something minor, you know, and, mm-hmm. and nothing that's a huge catastrophe. I mean, I've filled in drains with self-leveler where they had to jackhammer out the concrete. So yeah, you know.
Oh man. Live and learn.
I grabbed the wrong material and installed it in the wrong job. So yeah, like I said, it's inevitable that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. You try and mitigate.
Mm-hmm.
That's you put systems in place to mitigate your risk. How does that work with your guys? What are you doing to get them on the right path to do it Mario's way? Because you're not everybody you're hiring is green, right? Some of these guys have experience.
Right. So
how are you cracking the whip, breaking the habits, and saying, well, this is the way, it's my show now?
You know, I hired somebody from back east on a UEI that I did in Sacramento off of one of the floor laying groups. And if you tell me you can do this and you can do that, then you better be able to do it. Cause I'm going to test you. I'm going to challenge you to do it. So either you're going to be a rock star or you're going to be a complete liar and a failure to me. So, you know, I will make them prove themselves. Problem is they'll prove themselves while I'm right there. It's when I'm not on the job that everybody wants to take a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable. You know, unfortunately for Michael, you know, he's on my jobs. He's seeing what's going on. And if I'm not there and I ask him, well, he has no choice but to tell me what's going on. So now the other guys in the group are thinking, oh, look, he's the teacher's pet or he's a snitch. No. I asked him a question. He's going to give me the right. He's going to give me the honest answer, because if he doesn't, then he's going to be in trouble with me. So, you know what? Don't, for lack of a better word, don't fuck around while I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Michael has a bigger vested interest in the success of the company than anybody else. But that's no reason to think he's a snitch. Like, all of those guys should have that same vested interest if they want to continue to make money, right? If you're not successful, you don't get a paycheck. And it's interesting that some employees just can't make that click. And honestly, look, I was younger. I was a horrible employee when I was young. I honestly went into a Target at one point and I did get the job, but I went in and I said, I want the job with the least amount of responsibility. I'm just trying to make some extra money. And I got it. And they gave me the job to pull stock from the back and bring it out. And I only had to work a couple hours a week. I still got fired for not showing up because I wouldn't go enough. But there were days where, like, there would be the call to go up to the register. I'd ignore the radio. I'd get all the stock pulled in like an hour and a half and put on the shelves. And I still had 2.5 hours to go. I'd just go hang out in the back of the warehouse in a corner and sit there and do nothing, because I didn't want to do anything. Like, that's not why I was there. So me being the owner now, I've learned that there's other things involved. So how do you communicate that with your guys? How do you get them involved and invested in knowing, like, look, this is the way it needs to be so that you can continue to get paid and have security?
It's tough. I mean, it's tough. Some guys, you know, just don't want to change their ways. You know, it's like, I don't know, I get frustrated on a daily basis with some of these guys. Some of these guys that I use are part-time help. They're union guys that don't have any work in the union right now. I'll bring them on. Problem with that is they want to work their 8 hours and that's it. You know, they could put their 8 hours in and have a 10x10 area of VC2 to install. Me or Michael, we're going to stay in and install it. The union guy said, nope, that's my 8 hours. I'm done. You know, so I fight with that all the time. Mm-hmm. when I bring in these people. You know, Michael knows how I work. Michael knows, you know, we're there to get the job done. We're not there to put in our 8 hours. So it's a fight. It's hard. I have to be there physically on them to make sure that it gets done. Because if I don't push them, like I said, they're just going to work their 8 hours and not really worry about how much gets done, because all they care about is their paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you've stepped, this is something we didn't cover. You stepped back. You're not on the floor. You just manage at this point.
Right. Oh, but I'll still get on the floor. I had to the other day with one of the newer guys. I'm 57 years old. You know, if I can still get on the ground and spread glue and beat you, then that should make you want to go faster.
I agree. Not everybody's motivated that way, sadly, but I agree.
I won't ask anybody to do that I won't do myself. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm telling you that floor needs to be scraped by hand, that big old room, well, I'll get down there and do it with you. You know, I'm not going to ask you to do it if I'm not willing to do it myself.
Yeah.
And if I'm this old and I can still move this quick, then you need to up your game. You know, you need to put a little more time and effort into learning this trade instead of just being here for a paycheck.
Well,
that's my biggest qualm, is people wanting to be there just for a paycheck, because I have a vested interest in this. You know, I only make money if this job gets done.
Correct.
I only make money if I get this job done and there's no callbacks.
Yep. Well, and okay, so like, being honest, if you're 57, right, you're no spring chicken.
Nope.
And you've been doing flooring full time since you were 18, like your body is probably a little beat up. You're probably a little sore. Your knees might pop a little bit. If you're showing a 22-year-old, 24-year-old who's in his like prime up on spreading glue and scraping a floor and installing flooring, yes, you have the experience, right? You have the knowledge of how to make things go a little bit quicker, but they should probably at least be able to keep up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm with you. It's just how, oh man, right? Like getting these people to, it's frustrating to like try and communicate what you want. Like I can, the guy I have right now is making $20 an hour. I've told him I will pay him 25 because I know what he's producing a day. Just don't be late and don't miss a day. Don't call in on me for 1 month straight. 1 month.
Yeah.
Be here all month. Hasn't done it yet. It's been two months of no raise yet. So, I don't know if it doesn't click that $5 is an extra week of pay to him. So, you know, at $20 an hour times 40 hours a week, you're making $800 a week, $3,200 a month.
Yeah.
If he gets that 25, he's now making $4,000. He gets an entire week's pay by just showing up for a month straight. It's, I can't even leave him like 100% alone. Like I can't drop him off on a job and let him use all my tools to get a job done start to finish. And I want to pay him $25 an hour. I think that's pretty darn generous.
You know, I had a guy, or I have a guy that is getting $20 an hour. Very green, very green.
Mm-hmm.
6 months in the trade, maybe. You know, he had the nerve to come up to me last week and wanting a $5 an hour raise. You're nowhere near a $5 raise. I said, what you're doing right now, Michael was getting $12 an hour for what you're doing at $20 an hour. I said, right now you're overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
Are you overpaid because you're related? Probably. But that's where it stops. Now that you got this money, now you got to prove yourself to me. And I'm not going to go easy on you, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel sick today, so I'm not coming in. You know what? You depend on that paycheck each week. I depend on you to come into work every day.
Yep.
Because when you don't show up, you screw up my schedule.
Yep.
So trust me, it's a daily battle. Sometimes I feel like I'm babysitting.
Uh-huh. Is there anything that you've come across in your time that's helped you find more reliable guys through an interview process? Is it that there's got to be a way to find the winners, right? And the 110% guys instead of the 65% guys.
They're far and few in between. In this trade, people say that they're either alcoholics or drug addicts. And you know what? Yeah, probably. I couldn't tell you a percentage, but definitely a lot of them have issues. I've worked in Vegas for a couple of years, and on every Friday, you see more trucks at the casino parking lots loaded with carpet than you see out on the job because the casinos offer to cash their check for free, give them a token. And, you know, once they've got those guys in there and they've cashed their check, they forget all about working.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, they're far and few in between in this trade. You know, someone has to be really hungry to want it, to make it. You know, most of them are just there for a paycheck.
And that's, I don't know. I think what I've noticed in my short time is that anybody that's going to be the 110% guy is probably already running their own show. Because that's, they get it, right? They understand that if they give 110%, 120%, the payout is far more on the other side. And so why would I give you that effort when I can do it myself and make that, right? Like I'm willing to take the risk because I'm that guy. So it's, I don't know. I know there's reliable people out there. There's people that stay gainfully employed. I think my new thing is how do you build the company that has the reputation that you attract the winners from other companies to come and work for you? How do you get them to quit their job and come and work for you? Because there are those reliable employees. And they really do. They want to clock in, they want to clock out. They want to put in their 8, their 10 hours, whatever it's going to be for the day, but they understand that flooring is going to be this ebb and flow of time. You might put in 40 hours a week, but you might do 10 hours one day, 8 hours the next, and then you finish early on Friday or something like that. Mm-hmm. How do you get those guys to come and work for you? Is it you? What reputation do you have to build besides paying better and having a better benefits package? Where are you going in the industry, and what kind of reputation are you creating to draw those people in? I think that's my new thing, is that's what I need to create.
But it's almost like you can't. In California, how do I want to say this? The Mexicans that are illegal in California, they come out here, they work for someone for 6 months to a year, and they think they know it all. They want to go out on their own. They go out, they get that job, and they screw it up. Mm-hmm. Now I'm called to come fix it. Problem is, they're out there and they're willing to do it cheaper than what I'll do it for. So it's too easy in this trade for anybody to say, oh, I want to be my own boss, because anybody can go out there and get a job if they're willing to do it cheaper. Because if they're doing it cheaper, they're still making probably more money than if they were doing it hourly. Problem is one or two jobs in and they've soiled their name. Nobody wants to hire them.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, everybody seems to think they're worth more money than they are. You know, they have to be able to produce so much footage a day in order for it to make profitable for me, or it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I don't want to be big anymore. I just want to make a decent living. Mm-hmm. And I go back and forth from, you know, do I want to run 6 guys or do I want to just run, you know, 2 guys? And if I just run 2 guys, then I limit the jobs that I can do.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants their job done in a timely manner. So I fight that battle all the time where I say, nope, it's just going to be me, Michael, and Andrew. And other times it's like, yeah, okay, I'll bring three more guys on. And it, like I said, it's a catch 22. Damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that there's a good balance. I'm going through the same thing with my business right now.
I mean, I enjoy what I do. I had the opportunity. I had a full ride to go to San Luis Obispo to be a vet, and I turned it down because of a girl. So now I'm a floor layer. I enjoy what I do. I love what I do. I don't like every job that I'm on, mm-hmm. but I'm really good at what I do. And I enjoy it. I truly enjoy it.
So
I'm not the best, but I'll put my skills up against anybody, mm-hmm. because I've been good. I mean, I'm fat because I have so much knowledge in me. Not because
I like to eat. I love it. I love it. It's not the tacos.
No, not at all.
Oh, too funny. Where's the girl?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen her in 30 some odd years.
That's wonderful. And yeah. Do you still really like animals and think you would have enjoyed being a vet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, in high school, you know, I was full on FFA. Raised my steers, showed them at the state fair. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Okay. Cool. It's always interesting. I like doing a little psychology and counselor stuff. That's
fun. Well, my sister also got me a job working in the bank with her. You know, got to wear a nice suit every day. And my dad offered me more money. My mom wanted me to stay in the banking. I said, nah, I'm going to work for dad. So here I am. I'm a floor layer.
Hey, very respectable in my opinion. Now,
I have life experiences. I've got to go to Hawaii and install, so it's been great.
Yeah. Well, we make the world go round, man. Like the world doesn't function without the trades. Everybody wants to be all about technology and this, that, and the other thing. Look, you need truck drivers and you need tradesmen because nothing's getting built and delivered without us.
If it wasn't for us, everybody'd be on dirt floors.
There you go. Which is why we need to charge more people. Dirt floors work just fine. Charge more, okay?
That's right.
Especially since the FHA makes a house have to have a floor in it before it can be bought, all right? If you're going to get an FHA loan, there has to be a floor. It cannot be a concrete subfloor as a floor. I know this for a fact. Charge more because it's required. It's not a commodity, no matter what they want you to think.
But if you buy the house and you're a flooring installer, you can install your own floors.
Correct, but not if it doesn't have something in it first. So make sure to charge whoever's...
No, that's not true, because I bought my house and I installed my floors in my house. But the company that was doing the flooring had to hire me to do my own house.
Yes, that's fine. I'm just saying that if you were going to get an FHA-backed loan...
Right.
It has to have a floor in it at the time of purchase. If it's foreclosed on and you're paying cash, that's a different story. But a lot of people got to get those FHA-backed loans and you know, look, right there, that says flooring is not a commodity. It is a necessity in the American lifestyle. Therefore, it should be charged for accordingly. Do not let anyone fool you.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Anything I missed? Anything you want to say, you want to rant about? Anything like that?
No, you know what? I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I don't rant much, you know, even on all these groups, you know, I don't try to beg on anybody's work. If someone asks me a question, you know, I'll offer my advice, but some of these groups you get, you know, 110 comments. It's like, why do I need to put my comment in there? It's like, it's already been said. But you know, people like to abuse people on these groups.
Yeah. That's definitely something.
You know, like I said, I'm not perfect. I have my faults. I'm good at what I do. I'll put my skills up against anybody, but I'm not saying I'm the best guy out there by no means.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot of knowledge. I've been in this trade since probably 73.
Whew, wasn't even a twinkle in anybody's eye yet.
Right? Yeah. You know, I was welding in 1973 before welding. Anybody knew what welding was. So I've seen the industry come a long way in these years.
Yeah, and there's so many changes. I mean, that's a whole nother episode of sitting down and talking with somebody that's witnessed changes over the past 50, 60, 70 years of flooring. I mean.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. In the 5 years I've been involved, the changes I've seen from tools and how products are dealt with and stuff. It's insane. So I can only imagine. All right. Where can, if people have questions, comments, concerns, they want to bag on you, they want to find out the best taco places in Corona, how do they find you? How do they reach you?
They don't. I'm not reachable.
Okay, fair enough. Oh man. All right.
People can reach me on any one of those floor laying forums. I'm all over the place, you know. Anybody can reach out. Like I said, I'm easy, but you know, if they wanna book me, I don't have a talent agent yet.
Okay, fair enough.
But like I said, the whole thing about this is what's good is, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have met you. I wouldn't have met Cornell, you know.
Correct.
I wouldn't have been able to have the resources for Cornell to do some work for me that I don't have to drive 6 hours. So it's great that we have these forums and, you know, that we can reach out to each other.
Yeah. No, they're great. Like, I wouldn't have known about certifications. I wouldn't have known about surfaces. I wouldn't have been able to gain the knowledge I've gained to run my business the way I'm running it without these groups. I've shaved years off of my learning curve by being exposed to all of this, right? I can download knowledge so quickly. They're absolutely wonderful. So we'll throw out my favorite group, the start of it all, Flooring Installers of America. You can find Mario in there. Look for a picture of a taco when California opens back up, and that'll be him.
Exactly. Well, you got that straight.
Yeah. Got to open back up, man. We gotta make something happen here. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your insights, your knowledge, your wisdom, the willingness to chat about something so openly.
Just remember, we're doing tacos in 6 weeks when I go back to Mesa.
You got it, man. I will. We'll have to set something up. I'll bring the family. I'll bring the wife and kids.
You have to pick the place.
That's rough.
Between now and 6 weeks from now, you need to do your taco research and find a good restaurant.
Dude, I barely have enough time to record podcast episodes. Now I got to go find a taco joint.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Just get up an hour early each day, you know?
I already do.
Tell yourself you're going to dedicate 1 hour to finding the best taco spot in your area.
There's some taco spots, man. We'll find something.
No pressure.
No, come not at now. All. Actually, I think there's a food truck near me that's like on a corner on like Friday nights that's supposed to be pretty good. So that's, you got to find them hole in the wall places. That's how you find a good taco, man. If there's roaches crawling around, you got a good taco.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it was good talking to you.
Yeah, no, I very much enjoyed it. Thank you. Once again, thank you for your time. Thank you, Sexy, for your time, for allowing me to have you in after hours time. So I appreciate her as well.
I'm sure that's going to cost me something.
Right on. All right, Mario, you have a good night.
All right, you too.
All right, bye.
Later.
That's all the time we have for this week. To keep the conversation going, head on over to the Floor Academy Facebook group. Be sure to subscribe so you can hear each and every episode. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and most major podcast directories. Don't forget to leave a review and let us know what you think about the show. If you would like to be a guest, have questions or feedback, you can email us at flooracademypodcast@gmail.com. You can help support the show by becoming a patron over at www.patreon.com/flooracademy. Remember to learn while you earn.